Hi guys, welcome to another episode of The Takeoff. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm really glad to be with you. It is the 31st of January, so the final day of January 2023. Can you believe that we're a month into the new year already? It's absolutely nuts. You blink and you miss it. But yeah, doesn't seem to be any change in the construction market from an employment perspective. I have noticed some companies being a little bit more cautious on their approach, which is interesting. This is all about this is a confidence industry that we're in. Construction is built on confidence, and certainly recruitment is based on business confidence as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how things develop over the next few months. But by and large, I do believe that We're going to see continued growth throughout the rest of this year. You know, there is a lot of news lines, a lot of stories, and you know, over the last few months of why you know what's happening in the industry. There's economic uncertainty. You know, obviously they're predicting recessions in the US and the UK, but on a positive level, I am hearing now from a lot of the key voices in the industry that, yes, it will be a technical recession, but it's not going to be as difficult and as hard as they predicted. And if you remember, you know, we did enter recession during COVID, where, you know, you have to have 2 quarters of GDP decline to actually hit a recession. So it is going to be interesting to see what happens in Australia, New Zealand. I mean, I haven't seen any indication of that. You know, listening to a number of business podcasts, you know, it does seem quite bullish on the market. You know, we are seeing our cryptocurrencies continuing to rise again this week. And overall, it's quite an interesting market. There are going to be companies, individuals, people who are going to be quite coy throughout the next few months. But then there are going to be others that are going to be quite bullish and say, you know what, I'm going to really take advantage of others, you know, slight disconfidence or inconfidence, whatever you want to call it. And so the things are going to continue to develop. Very interested in seeing how things go. But this episode, we're going to talk about why construction companies could go broke this year if they don't get their act together. So last year, we did see a number of you know, really large scale contractors, you know, go broke, not to mention the likes of ProBuild. You know, they're tier one builder, you know, across Victoria, working on, you know, major projects in Queensland, New South Wales also. Went into the administration last year, you know. So if they can go broke, you know, the small mom and pop companies can go broke as well, you know. Whether you're a 20 people business, 40 people business, 1,000 people business, there's we're going to talk about some of the reasons why construction companies could really see themselves really go towards the red line this year. So obviously, I'm a recruiter, okay? Now, I'm not the guy who knows the ins and outs of risk, of contracts, of the financial industries. I'm a person who, I call myself, you know, a broker of people. You know, that's what I am. I connect people together. And this is, I'm in a fortunate position because I hear what the thoughts of many people around the industry, and I can speak to the director of a PQS firm, or I can speak to a developer, or I can speak to, you know, someone running a large engineering firm, and I'm getting lots of different perspectives of things. But and coming together, there are four key points I'm going to discuss today as to why construction companies could go bust this year. And obviously, we want to avoid that as much as possible, but I'm not too sure whether it is possible just because of the continued rat race that we're in on a day-to-day basis. So the number one reason I believe construction companies will potentially go broke this year will be bad contracts, right? So signing bad contracts to keep staff employed. That's something that I see, you know, on a yearly basis, you know, even on a quarterly basis, wherever, you know, companies are winning multi-million dollar projects and all of a sudden hire a lot of people, and then that project comes to a close and now they're looking at going, well, we're going to need to, you know, win two or three projects in the coming months in order to keep these people employed. If we don't keep them employed, the market begins to really gossip, and there's talk around the industry that XYZ construction companies laying off people, they're not doing too good, and you know that's bad for branding, you know. So that is a major component to why I believe construction companies will actually accept risky contracts, and that is to keep staff employed. And there is very little, you know, picking and choosing the right projects. You know, there's a lot of companies that will engage with bad clients because of, you know, really like historic relationships with those clients. And, you know, why are they bad? Because, you know, generally speaking, they don't pay on time, or they try and get out of paying. You know, they'll fight tooth and nail over, you know, a $50 variation, all of these sorts of things. And really, are they a client that, you know, that you want to be doing business with? Most likely not. But a lot of companies will sign contracts to those clients because, you know, they're big turnover. They'll add to the top end of the business in terms of the balance sheet. It's maybe a good project to have on, you know, the capability statement. These sorts of things are reasons, I believe, why companies sign bad contracts. And it's difficult because obviously if I was a managing director of a $30, $40 million turnover business and I had, you know, 60 people working in it and they're looking at me and saying, well, you know, we need work or I'm going to resign. And that's difficult, you know, or we need work. If you can't give us work, you know, the director's going to have to make you redundant. Again, that's difficult, and that's a really shitty position to be in. So I get why there is the difficulty, those difficult decisions that are made, and those, you know, those bad decisions are made in hindsight. But it does take bravery, you know, it takes a strategy. You know, I always just sort of think about footballing terms. Obviously, it's called soccer, this part of the world. But, you know, you don't build a winning team without a vision, without a philosophy. And if your business has a bad philosophy, and that bad philosophy might be, you know, signing bad contracts, you're never going to be a winning team. And it's going to be a poisonous circle, you know, where you're hiring a lot of people because you want a project, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're that project's going to shit, and then you're having to hire loads of contractors, and then the client's pissed off, and then, all, you know, it's a poisonous circle of bad conditions across the board. And it does take bravery. It takes someone who can say, no, we're going to pick and choose our clients. You know, we're willing to accept a lower turnover this year. We're willing to accept a lower turnover for the next couple of years, but that feeds into the five-year vision. And my opinion, that's a better way of doing things than, you know, desperately needing to hire people and then people being onboarded really badly. And again, that poisonous circle, you know, kicking off once more. So bad contracts are really determined by bad business philosophy, and that's number one. And if that doesn't change, you know, construction companies are going to find it very difficult this year. Number two is not hiring the right people in the right roles. So not hiring and engaging experts. And, you know, there are a lot of people who listen to this podcast that are coming from a quantity surveying background, but I don't want people to think this is a QS podcast, because it's not. It's a podcast for the wider construction industry, from architecture through to engineering, through to construction, through to development management, the whole sphere of the industry. I want to be engaging with this podcast, but I do have a bit of a bone of contention with quantity surveying not being utilized in the right capacity, specifically in Australia, where the QS role in Australia is really known as being a number cruncher, someone who's just sitting measuring. That's what a QS is known as in Australia. But that's not what a QS is. Okay, so the QS role in Australia is divided up into estimating and cost planning, contract administration, and then pre-QS, so professional quantity surveying. But that role of estimating and cost planning and post-contract, you know, contract administration, contracts management, that's what a QS does in, you know, globally. Really, it's you know, Australia seems to be one of the only countries that utilizes this really, fractured QS role. So what happens is that you'll get the CA role, which obviously is in massive demand right now. But I've seen CAs who started off as a, you know, company receptionist, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all, because obviously, you know, the front of house is massively important, but that doesn't mean that they're a contracts expert, right? And I've genuinely seen that from tier one construction firms. Like, I'm talking $1 billion businesses that, you know, are, you know, the top five and annual turnover companies in Australia. They have hired receptionists who have become contract administrators, and that blows my mind. And that's that's a massive part of the reason why this industry could fail, or construction companies could fail, and the QS role could fail to a massive extent. So, you know, the QS role in major cities, right? And I'm talking about cities with millions of people. Think of London, right? Think of the skyscrapers in London. Think of the projects that are happening in London. Think of the contractors in London. BAM, Lang O'Rourke, John Holland, you know, massive companies. Balfour Beatty, huge organizations use the QS as it is traditionally known in Dublin. Now, Dublin is the only European city that English is the first language. So you see massive companies from the US utilizing Dublin, but one, because of that reason, one, because, you know, Brexit happened and they, you know, let's face it, you know, the UK shot themselves in the foot. And then obviously, because of the corporation tax as well, obviously that's probably the main indicator, but Dublin, you know, has companies like Intel, Google, Microsoft, all have their hubs in Dublin, and the QS role is utilized there in the correct manner. In Johannesburg and Dubai and Qatar, in these major cities in the world that are growing at an exponential rate, far, far faster than any Australian city, where they've had recently, Qatar had the FIFA World Cup, you know, the massive cities in South Africa had the South African FIFA World Cup, you know, in 2016, I think it was. You know, we had the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. You know, we have the London Olympic Games in 2012. You know, these big, these huge projects, these multifaceted construction projects utilize the QS in the correct manner, where it would be utilizing them from pre-construction phase, so from the tendering, procurement, the estimating function, right through to the contracts management, to the client interfacing, to being the commercial lead on a project. Like, doesn't it make sense for that particular individual to get involved in the pre-construction? So for letting the subcontractors, they're building relationships with the subbies before the construction starts, not getting someone who is an estimator and maybe wouldn't have, and again, I love estimators. Estimators are a big part of my business, but a lot of estimators wouldn't be maybe the most confident and the most client-facing individuals. But QSs in the UK, Ireland, and South Africa, you know, all over the world will get involved from the start, build relationships with your subbies, are working through that procurement exercise, are going through the design phase and tendering phase, and then they're going out on site and managing the project commercially. And you know, that takes a massive part of the job off the project managers at the same time. You know, so there's so much about the QS role that's not being utilized in Australia that should be. And it's really, really frustrating to see the differences and the challenges. And I'm having these challenges at the moment. You know, I've got working with a guy at the moment who's in South Africa, you know, is highly, highly, highly experienced, who's an associate in South Africa, who really is going to have to take a QS role in Australia because he hasn't got local experience. And it's, you know, you're just wondering, why is that the case? Like, we're not putting experts in the right roles. We're allowing someone who has no qualifications in construction, who's a receptionist in a construction firm, become a contracts administrator because they're good at document management. And, you know, they might have a good personality and they may have built a good rapport with the PM. But does that mean that they're a contract specialist? You know, in Ireland and the UK and Scotland, there's a 4-year sandwich degree where you'll do, you know, 2 to 3 years of university, and then you'll have a year placement. You know, so what I always found when I was recruiting for those guys back home in Ireland was they could add value immediately when they entered the workforce because they'd done essentially 2.5 years of study and then a year's placement. And then on their final year, they would usually do that part-time. So the place that they would do their placement usually employed them part-time. So they'd be coming out with 3 years of a qualification where they study purely quantity surveying, nothing else, purely quantity surveying. So really focusing on cost planning, measurement, procurement, you know, letting of trades, building subcontractor knowledge, you know, contracts, FIDEC contracts, JCT, NEC type contracts. They've got a really solid foundation of contracts management. And then they come out with a year and a half worth of experience with a company. And then, you know, that they're hitting the ground running. Usually that business, you know, offers them a full-time permanent role, you know, once they actually graduate. So it's so frustrating to see what happens in Australia. And I don't know why. You know, I don't know why they end up employing 3 different people for one person's job. You know, could that not save so much money? So not hiring and engaging experts certainly has to be high up there as to why construction companies could go broke this year. And they could go broke in a big, big way. And that's coming down to too much risk, not knowing the contract inside out, you know, not having the right contract knowledge, overlooking. You know, I've heard horror stories of, you know, CAs and estimators overlooking massive parts of a project, not pricing up a services package worth, you know, 4 million. You know, why is that? Maybe because they're not the experts that should be there. So again, that's got to be a big part of it. Not hiring the right people in the right roles, it's got to stop. You've got to put the best people in there and start interviewing them hard. If you need to interview someone like for 3 hours, interview them for 3 hours, but interview them hard. And if you believe that you can get them to do what they can do, and even if they don't have the local experience, and you've got to really put a trigger on that, it's got to be a massive part of it. Number 3, there's literally no training and development in construction. Right, and I don't mean to say that in a jovial way, but it's true. If you're if you're coming out of a construction management degree from QUT or Bond or, you know, Auckland University or wherever it might be, there are a few of those graduates will get cadetships, okay, and usually they get cadetships from tier one contractors. Some of them will get, you know, the likes of AECOM or ARUP or someone like that will offer them cadetships. But by and large, probably 80%, 70-80% don't get cadetships. So that 70-80% is hitting the workforce, really just giving it a crack and haven't got a clue what they're doing. They'll maybe join a tier 2 or tier 3 contractor. They'll maybe get the job title of cadet, but they will not be given the real cadetship program that is required for success. And the reason for that is because, one, construction companies, you know, work on bad contracts, are under pressure from their client, haven't got enough resources, have priced the job too little and or too cheaply, and all of a sudden they're under the pump, can't offer anyone any training. So again, this comes down to the philosophy. What is your construction philosophy? What is your business philosophy? Sign bad contracts, hire bad people, you know, employ people, don't onboard them, don't train them, don't develop them, you know, go bust. That's the reality of it. Like, it's not rocket science. Gotta have bravery, gotta have balls in this market to really, you know, achieve something. So if you're not offering training, you're not offering development, you're not promoting, you're not developing your own people. So you're reliant on really going to the external market and hiring other people. So you might get a guy from your competitor, and then what does that do? You're paying maybe 30, 40% more because he, she isn't going to leave unless they're getting a pay increase. And then you're including your recruiter fees in there. And then also you're recruiting, you know, you're looking at, right, we lost someone because our onboarding was crap, and, you know, haven't had time to spend with anybody, and the development's really been really bad. And then really, you know, how much money have you lost from that person? The common analogy in recruitment terms is it's half the person's yearly salary. So if someone's on 200,000, you've probably wasted 100,000 by having to bring on someone else. So again, this all comes down to what the bigger picture is. So not having training, not having development is going to really hurt the business long term. Not breeding your own, again, it's not, looking at that soccer philosophy, you know, you look at the wonder years of Man United. You know, they brought through all their own young talent, you know, from David Beckham, Gary Neville, you know, the real greats within Man United all come from actually internally within the club. You look at Barcelona, you know, the likes of Messi, you know, Puyol, Pique, you know, all the amazing footballers all come from within because there was a philosophy, you know, there was managers and leaders within that bought into the philosophy that all could teach and develop the youngsters in the right way. And that breeds success. That 100% breeds success. And we're seeing it, you know, from other clubs, and it's not just football, it's multiple different types of sports. But understandably, you don't grow your own, you're paying more, and it's very, very difficult. Last point, again, it's coming into hiring experts. Opening, and I talk about this nearly in every show, and I don't mean to be banging my head off a brick wall, but opening up options to international candidates and getting accredited. I spoke to a candidate today, Irish, okay? 15 years experience, phenomenal experience across the board from infrastructure building, advisory. He's worked for contractors, and he's worked for consultancies, okay? Currently working at the moment in Australia, is sponsored by this particular company, but hates it. And he's just thinking of packing it all in and going home. One, because he hates the role he's doing. Two, because there's no crack in the office, right? And you get it, you know, if there's no culture in the office, then what's the point in being there? But he wants to move from his current role into a contractor. And I said, mate, there's genuinely maybe only 3 or 4 companies that I know that can sponsor you. They're usually all tier one, and I don't have relationships with tier one. And that's the truth. I don't recruit for Lendlease or Lang O'Rourke and all the rest of them. Why? Because I don't want to, because they're going to be shitty contracts. You know, they're going to tell me to sign their terms, and I'm not signing their terms. So again, that's my philosophy. I don't want to work with those big brands because they're shit contracts. And again, it is what it is, but that's what I think. On that point, that individual is a highly experienced individual, but he's potentially going to go back to Ireland. One, because contractors aren't accredited. How hard is it actually to get accredited? When I was in Australia in 2020, I wanted to sponsor someone, and I got our business accredited. Me, I didn't have to go through an immigration agent. When I say me, I mean my wife. But I was there supporting her, and she was able to do everything. And I mean, she has a full-time job, and obviously I had to get a lot of information together, but we were able to do it, and we didn't have to pay any agents. We didn't have to go through you know, a massive process. You know, there's labor market testing where you have to advertise for 30 days. You know, hit me up, let me know. I'm advertising all the time. If you need help with that, But getting accredited could open your could open the universe to candidates for you. It literally does open the universe to candidates. We just put this into perspective. So as a business, we signed up a blue chip client within the last few weeks. This blue chip client is, you know, on the stock exchange, right? They're a tier one consultancy. They've engaged us exclusively. We have agreed terms that I'm happy with. They're accredited and they're open up to candidates. Sorry, open up to candidates worldwide. So you know where we've got candidates from? San Diego, Calgary, Heathrow or UK, Dublin, and the Middle East. And within 5 days, we've put a shortlist together where we're meeting the client, and we know for a fact that they'll be happy with these clients or with these candidates, and they will sponsor them. And they know for the type of work that they're doing, it's going to be 6 to 9 months before they get here. But that's fine because they're going to be getting people that are locked in because they're sponsoring them for, you know, 3, 4 years. And, you know, that's just good business. That makes sense. You know, you're going to the market and you're getting the top quality people rather than recruiting within a talent pool where there's no one available. There's no one available in our local talent pools right now. Yes, of course, there's people available, but not very good people. And you gotta really get real with this. We are going to have to recruit internationally to save our businesses, not to, you know, just to plug a hole, but to save our businesses long term, to save the industry long term. And it's gonna be difficult. Of course, it is. You've got to spend more time with people, teaching them methodologies, teaching them slight differences in terminology or whatever it might be. But you've got to remember, these people are smart. And I'm not just talking about, you know, people from overseas that might not be from the same culture that you're from. But you know, I'm not talking about. I'm talking about global search. I'm talking about, can we get people from the US, can we UK, you know, Europe, Middle East, Asia? Why don't we just go for the best of the best? That is the opportunity if you have an accreditation. So, again, there's so many reasons why construction companies could go bust this year. I don't mean to be a negative Nancy because I'm not negative, but I want to help businesses. I want to help businesses see what they could achieve by hiring the right people, by signing better contracts, by putting the right experts in the right roles, by thinking of a philosophy, a business philosophy, a building philosophy that engages the market, engages your clients. You know, if you work with better clients, you'll get better candidates when they apply. Your brand looks better as a whole. It's just win-win-win. So hopefully, you know, we can reverse engineer these points and think, you know what, we could utilize this. What is our philosophy as a business? You know, are we picking and choosing our clients? Are we picking and choosing our projects? Are we looking at candidates not for where they have worked, you know, locally, but what they have done as a career in the past? Are they good at what they do? Put them under pressure, pick and prod, you know, making sure that they're the right people. Get accredited, opens your world up to opportunities. And I think if you were to start to think like that, you'll have massive success as a business. So guys, and over the next week, I've got 3 interviews coming up. We're super excited. One coming from the architecture industry. We've got a contract specialist coming up who is working on contracts globally, but as well as Australia and New Zealand. And he is going to talk about, you know, what does a good contract look like? And number three, we've got a really ambitious and we've got an ambitious QS who's coming on. He's wanted to talk about the differences between working as a QS internationally and working as a QS in Australia, and some of the differences and challenges and what the industry really needs to think about. So super exciting in the next few weeks. And again, reach out to me if you're interested in coming on the podcast. Let's talk about things. Let's start challenging the industry as a whole. Let's start putting ideas out there. Let's start collaborating. All of these things is the reason why I actually love doing this, because it brings a talking point. You know, send this to your manager, send this to your director, and hopefully he or she supports you. But ultimately, we're all here to better construction. And this is for the long term, not just for, you know, in the next few months. This is for 10 years down the line. So great, guys. Really good to talk to you all today. And looking forward to next week's show. Cheers.